has a chance of making it if he gets the right care. The other one got stabbed in the leg, but not sure he's realized it yet. Connell felt the reality pressing down on him. It was heavy, and his knees weren't sure they could fight back. The dark pool growing from beneath the man on the floor wasn't helping any. It made the roaring in his ears even louder. "Why are you here?" he asked, knowing that was important, but the weight was too much. His knees buckled, and his rump hit the ground. Beneath the map table, he could see the man's face looking right at him, but not. Those eyes were empty, dead. They didn't blink, so neither could he. Sucking at the air, Connell tried to get a breath, but couldn't. His throat wouldn't let anything in, just like his friends hadn't let that man near him. "Connell?" The voice was S's. He knew it, but he couldn't look at her. The dead man demanded his complete attention. "Connell!" Storm yelled toward the front of the tent. "Guys, I need some help. Someone take the compost out." Connell tried to get another breath. "My guards," he begged. Essa assured him. "There are at least a dozen men working to get Gobin to the physician. It sounds like he should survive. Aldo will be fine." Then something yellow moved between him and the dead man's eyes. It was enough to let him blink. That let him look up, finding Storm's face, inspecting his. Slowly, she reached up to touch his cheek, then nodded. "How do you feel, Your Highness?"
"I'm okay," he promised. "He didn't get close to me."
She dipped her head, almost like she was nodding.
"Yeah, I meant feel. Breathing okay?"
He pulled in a breath, only now realizing he could.
"Yeah, I couldn't a second ago, but I can now."
"Good. Now just stay here for a minute. It's better to stay down the first time because you'll end up here anyway." Her country accent tinted her words.
"How's your stomach, Highness?"
"Connell," he told her.
"You just saved my life, so I'm just Connell to you."
"I can't take the credit for that, but you seem more like a Connell. Your stomach..." He shook his head in confusion.
"It's gonna twist in a minute, and you'll puke. That's okay. We all do it, and it's best not to fight it. If you try to stand too fast, you'll faint, and we don't need no one seeing the prince pass out, right?"
He laughed, but it was weak.
"Definitely. Collapsing was bad enough."
Storm glanced back.
"Gee, can you get a pot for him? Tell one of the gladiators if you can't find one on your own."
He groaned and dropped his forehead to his knees.
"And now they all know what a weakling I am."
"Nah, it's nothing like that," she promised.
"Every one of us puked. I ain't met a fighter who hasn't yet, even Tristan."
"Whaley?" he asked.
"I'm sure, but I never asked her."
Astrid spoke up, proving she was also in the room.
"She did. Told me she hurled for most of her first day."
"Well," he decided, "then I won't feel bad about it."
He swallowed, feeling the first hint of nausea.
"Why do you want to kill me?"
"Because there's no way they can kill the queen right now. She's protected too well, so they're fighting dirty. If they killed you, then she'd make a mistake, and that's how the games are won. You try not to make the mistake first, but everyone makes them."
He shook his head.
"But Laylee wouldn't care."
Storm huffed in disbelief.
"Yeah, she would. That woman adores you, Connell. Everyone can see it, even if she's with the lion. There's more ways to give a shit than just sleeping with a man."
His eyes darted to the open door.
"Storm, this is Lanmont. Weren't a secret that the lion and the wolf got chained, and we're not dumb enough to think you ever had a chance. Doesn't mean you aren't a damned good prince, but also doesn't mean you're her lover."
Then she dropped her voice.
"But they don't know about the captain, Cherry told me."
"Yeah."
His stomach took that moment to flip.
"I'm going to need that pot."
"Gee!" Storm yelled.
The girl rushed in at the exact same moment.
"It's what I could find," she said, passing over a wooden bucket.
"Good enough," Storm told her as she handed it to Connell. "Now everyone out. If you aren't a maid, get your asses out of here and give a man some peace."
"Sorry, Storm,"
someone mumbled, and Connell heard feet shuffling. He tried to hold off, tried his hardest not to give in to the rolling in his belly, but he didn't even make it until the last person left before he heaved. Closing his eyes, he did exactly what she'd said and didn't try to fight it. While his body worked so hard to purge itself, Storm directed the girls. The moment he lifted his head to take a breath, someone pressed a mug of water into his hands. Like an obedient child, he drank, then repeated the process. Thankfully, when he took the second drink, it stayed down.
"Someone really tried to kill me?" he asked.
Essa knelt on his other side, taking the bucket from his hands. "Means you're doing something right, Connell."
"Why aren't you puking?"
She couldn't stop her smile. "Because that's not my first dead man. I was there when the assassin tried to get Laylee in the bath. That's when I started learning how to use the sword." She rubbed his shoulder. "And yes, I puked. So did Astrid."
"And Gianna, Mara?"
"G married a soldier. She's no stranger to death and funerals. Mara lived in the slums of Lanmont." Essa caressed his head. "You were the last innocent one among us." Slowly, he looked over at Storm.
"Thank you for taking care of me, killing the man and everything else."
"Always. I'd rather have a man like you running this country than any of the others I've met. Well, except Theodian. He's a good one, too."
She stood and offered a hand to help him up.
"And he's why I'm here. They said there's at least 1,500 men across the border. Possibly 16. And unlike our men, they're lined up and ready to fight."
Connell slapped his palm against hers and heaved himself up. For a moment, his head spun, but the two women put their arms around him, giving support. He hadn't needed to ask, hadn't been made to feel weak because of it. They'd just been there when he needed them most. He paused, realizing that's how Laylee felt with her gladiators. That was the bond that made Norheim so strong right now, and why all of these men would lay down their lives for her. She was one of them, just like he finally felt like the girls gave him a place to belong. And it was a powerful feeling. After spending a lifetime on the outside, always being made to feel like he wasn't good enough, he'd finally stumbled upon a place where he was not only needed, but actually belonged.
"Storm, I'm going to need your help. Can you get me a runner? No, mix that too."
He paused and looked over at her.
"And whatever job you used to have, tell them to replace you. You're now serving the prince until my guardsmen are well enough to return to duty."
He closed his eyes and added,
"If they can. Those men aren't young."
"They're in good hands," she assured him. "You just tell me what you need, Connell, and I'll make it happen."
"I need these men lined up and ready for Rhea to do anything. Our enemy doesn't seem like they want to fight fair."
"Yes, sir. I'll get some men to watch your door and have someone check your guards, too."
She turned to leave, but paused at the flap.
"Connell, it's an honor to serve the smartest man in Norheim. Thank you."
He felt his face getting warmer.
"Thanks, Storm. I needed that."
"I know."
She flashed an impish grin, then was gone. And even though he knew what she'd done, it still worked. Somehow, that gladiator had made him feel confident enough to keep going for just a little longer. Chapter 39 Theodian leaned over the balcony railing with Laylee's prettiest maid at his side. In the breeze, her strawberry blonde hair drifted around her face, and those green eyes jumped across the groups of Rhian soldiers like she was trying to see into their heads. He knew that look. He'd worn it himself a few times, like when he'd watched his partner's last fight.
"You okay?"
he asked. Her head snapped over. "Of course, sir." He chuckled. No matter how many times he told her to be comfortable around him, she always reverted to titles. At least she was just using Sir now instead of Dom.
"I'm nervous," he admitted.
The tip of her tongue darted out to moisten her lips. "I think I would be if I was down there, but up here it's like a game of Go."
"Yeah."
Glancing back, he checked on the boy playing inside his room.
"Sherry, I'm going to ask you a question, and you can feel free to tell me it's none of my business, okay?"
"Okay."
"What do you think of Storm?"
The flush on her cheeks answered before she could. "She says I'm beautiful."
"That you are, but it didn't answer the question."
She nodded, pulling in a deep breath to brace herself. "It's strange to talk about it out in the open, but I do like her,
I don't know if I love her, but she makes me feel giddy and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
He reached over and rubbed her shoulder.
And you deserve that. I just want you to know that here in Landmont, I don't care what you do. I certainly won't ask my gladiators to hide who they are. After everything they've seen, those fighters deserve whatever happiness they can find.
He leaned a little closer.
Which means Storm will probably brag about getting your attention.
Oh. Her answer was so soft, he couldn't get anything from it, so he kept going.
She seems to like you, though, and that girl is as loyal as they come. Just didn't know if I should tell her to keep it to herself.
Slowly, Cherry's tongue ran across her lips while she thought. I don't know how that would affect the Queen, sir. I owe her my life, and I don't want to cause problems for her.
Hmm.
He nodded, aware that she had a point, but he had one too.
Maybe if your secret gets out, then Connell's won't be as shocking. I mean, since someone always has to go first.
She took a deep breath and looked over at him. And once that happens, I'd never get to see my brothers again. Sir, I appreciate what you're asking, but you don't understand my situation. I have 4 younger brothers, and with my betrothal being annulled, I may as well be dead to them. My only chance is to earn a little honor by working for the Queen.
Ah, for some reason I thought your whole family had disowned you, but I guess it's only your father.
Yes, but he runs the house, she admitted. When my father caught me kissing a girl, he forbade my brothers from seeing me. They still tried slipping notes under my door to meet them places or catching me in the halls, but my father always made them pay. When I asked to break the betrothal, he told me I'd never see my family again and made plans to send me away. That's when I rode to Oberheim to ask the Queen for help. I haven't heard from them since, even though I sent a letter. He moved closer and slipped his arms around her shoulders.
Then I'll figure something else out for the prince, and I plan to do everything I can for you, too.
He gently rubbed her arm, aware that this fragile little girl just needed someone to take care of her.
Some way to make sure you can be happy, Cherry. No matter what your father says, you deserve that.
She nodded, but wouldn't meet his eyes. I'm pretty happy with the Queen. Laylee's more than fair, and as Tristan's girl, no one worries about the friends I keep, not even Storm. Finally, she looked up at him. But just because we're both queer doesn't mean it'll work out. It's no different than you trying to fall in love, Theodian. He huffed a weak laugh.
It actually is. Child, I was never the kind of man to chase skirts. I like having my friends, and I'm content with being surrounded by friends. Maybe I was born with something missing, or it could be the loss of my own tandem partner. But love isn't in my future. Not the romantic kind. I don't know. Maybe that's why I want to make sure my fighters all have a fair chance at finding it for themselves.
She gave him a timid smile before looking away. You're a good Dom. Like Laylee, I think you care more about others than yourself. Is that why she gave you Landmont? He wobbled his head from side to side.
Partially. In our time together, which wasn't much, I proved to her that she could trust me. After she was found, I proved that I honestly do want to make life better for these gladiators. I think when it came time to replace the former Dom, the wolf weighed a lot of things, and my experience in battle put me above any minor noble. She needs a warrior out here on the border, and that's all I am.
I think you might be more, she told him. I think she gave you the position because you're her friend. Laylee talks about you like she respects you a lot.
Good.
He looked back out at the Rions.
I hope I can earn it. Landmont is Norheim's watchtower. We're the westernmost point of the nation and a jewel Rhea has always wanted. As Dom, my job is to make sure the most they can do is dream of owning this place, but never make it a reality. Speaking of that, a certain lion told me that you are a tactical genius.
She waved that away. Tristan makes too much of a game of go. I just saw a move the royal father missed, and now he acts like I have all the strategic answers.
Wait, a move Ilario missed?
Theodian couldn't completely stop the laugh that welled up. Instead, he cleared his throat.
Han, Ilario is a tactical genius. That man pushed Rhea back a few times and managed to get a treaty out of them that kept the peace for over 20 years. He doesn't just understand battle plans, but also political ones, and I think you could help me do the same.
I'm willing to try. Not sure how good I'll be, but I promised I'd stay and look after Crush's boy, so it's not like I have anything else more pressing.
Her little smile was almost impish.
Willing to organize a few gladiators over the next few weeks?
And think of new ways to win, she asked, standing a little taller. Yes, sir, I am. I want to make sure they don't regret helping me, and Tristan seems to think I can do this. It's just hard to tell others what to do.
Not really. Just remind yourself that you speak for Laylee, and it helps. At least it does for me.
Cherry nodded, but she was looking out at the enemy lines. Yeah, that might help. Thank you, sir.
That's my girl. I'll make you a gladiator yet.
So caught up in feeling proud of himself, he almost missed what was happening across the border, but Cherry didn't. With a gasp, she leaned forward, pulling away from him.
They're moving!
His eyes followed hers, and she was right. 5 white horses were riding forward from the Rion lines, and 5 darker ones were moving up from Norheim's. Sitting in the center, Laylee's gold overdress stood out. He knew it matched the brass armor she wore, just like Death's silver cloak matched his, but the rest all wore black. Laylee had decided she didn't want her guardsmen's white to be confused with the Rion's, so she'd ordered everyone into black and yellow, or gold, so Norhamers wouldn't get confused in a panic. Even Death's silver cloak could be turned inside out to show gold, thanks to the hasty work of Princess Essa.
"The Odian?" Cherry asked, pointing out farther. "Is that normal?"
No, it most certainly wasn't. During parley, the opposing sides usually waited patiently to hear if the demands would be met, then prepared for battle afterward. Their presence now was supposed to be nothing more than a show of force, so the bunching up of Rion soldiers behind the first low rise was a problem, and a big one.
"Stay here," he told her. "Keep an eye on that. I need to get to Connell."
She caught his arm.
"And what if something else happens?"
"Then grab anyone you can find and have them run a note to us."
He pointed at his desk.
"There's nothing in there you can't see. I need your help, Cherry, because they're about to crush us."
"Go," she gasped.
He did, flying into the hall without bothering to close the door behind him. The first person he passed, a recovering gladiator, he told to find runners for Cherry, but he didn't slow. The words were yelled back as the Odian tromped down all 4 flights of stairs. His heart was pounding as hard as it ever had in the arena, but he couldn't stop. It would recover. His country might not, and the only time he had was while Laylee taunted the Rion standing across from her.
"They're aiming for the Citadel," he yelled as soon as he was outside. "Someone tell the Queen. There's a wedge heading straight for Lanmont." "But we're in parley," one of the soldiers said, clearly confused.
He saw the gladiator beside him slap the man's shoulder.
"Never stopped anyone from fighting dirty. Come on, let's get the lines armed."
Then the gladiator raised his voice.
"Grab your weapons! Rhea's going to rush us!"
And still Theodian ran. A sharp pain lanced through his side, proving he'd been comfortable for far too long, but that wouldn't stop him. Lanmont was the watchtower, and they'd be ready. His men and women would be ready, and he'd make sure of it. Hopefully, he'd even be able to save a few of them if he ran just a little harder. Outside the strategy tent, a group saw him coming and grabbed for their weapons. That there were guards this far behind the lines barely registered, but the body on the ground did. Unfortunately, Theodian didn't have time to stop and ask. He had to let Connell know so he could tell the rest.
"I need to talk to the prince,"
Theodian panted, barely able to get the words out. The man moved and yanked the flaps open so he didn't need to slow. As Theodian rushed into the darkness, all he could see were the beautiful fabrics of Laylee's retinue and the glint of their weapons. He waved them down as he sucked in only enough air to say it one last time.
"Rhea's forming a wedge. It's aimed right at the Citadel, and they haven't even waited for the parley before moving. They're going to stab the Queen in her back." "Go!" Connell yelled. "Essa, take the horse. Tell the front line to cover the Queen until she's behind them, then get right back here. Storm, I need everyone ready to move."
And just like that, they were in motion, but Theodian couldn't breathe. Stars were starting to swim before his eyes, and he dropped to his knees, desperately trying to find enough air so he wouldn't pass out. He'd made it, but only barely, and he knew he'd never be able to do it again.
The Odeon, Connell asked, passing him a mug of water. Are you okay?
He took it and dumped the contents over his head, not caring about the fancy fabrics he wore.
I'm too old for this shit, he grumbled. And I think Rhea's about to get fucked.
Connell knelt at his side.
Just worry about breathing, old man. You're having delusions.
He nodded.
Yeah, the kind where we win.
Chapter 40. The Rheons didn't really want her to give up Lanmont. They wanted to take it. As Layli countered every demand the general made with one of her own, she could see it in his face. The problem was that he was stalling, but she couldn't just ride away. Not without being the cause of this war, and her pride wasn't worth that. Then a horn sounded in the distance. Just one long note, not battle orders, but the general smiled. That's when she knew. Rhea had a plan, and they were going to take advantage of these outdated traditions to make it happen. She looked over at Death to find his skin had turned ashy.
I think we're done here, the general said. Unless you lay down your arms and surrender right now, Rhea will have Norheim.
Over my dead body, Layli promised. He dipped his head and reined his horse around.
That's the idea, Your Majesty.
Then the Rheons spurred their horses hard, racing back for their side.
Go, Layli snapped. They're going to hit us hard. Go, go, go!
As one, Death, Tristan, Dario, Colonel Mavrosh, and Layli raced back for the safety of their army. The horses' feet thundered in their rush, but something was happening. The Norheimers were arming. They weren't waiting for orders. They were already forming up and closing their lines, except for the gap right ahead of her. There they'd left an opening, but the line was already moving forward.
It started, Layli yelled, just as they passed through their soldiers.
One more pace, and they were clear of bodies, able to pull their horses in. Out of habit, she checked Tristan, aware that he hated riding, but he was with her, clutching at the saddle with one foot out of the stirrup. In a panic, she jumped off her horse and hurried to his side.
You okay?
He let her help him off.
That was not cantering, pup. I think you broke my balls.
Dario laughed.
You'll thank her when you see what was behind us.
He gestured through the line of men. There, across the battlefield, was an army. Red banners stood on the end of Rheon pikes, all dancing in the sky, and they were much too close.
Those bastards, she hissed, just as plague found them.
Rhea's pushing for the citadel, he said without preamble. The Odeon saw them preparing, and Connell sent Essa to warn us and some runners to warn the soldiers. Layli, you're expected on the flank.
Fuck.
She reached for her gelding, but plague stopped her.
You'll never make it mounted. It's just too thick back here. Foot traffic only.
Then he passed over her shield.
And I'm with you.
Then let's move.
She took off at a jog, feeling Tristan right behind her. A glance showed the rest following in their wake as they cut across the long line of men, aiming for the southernmost edge. That's where they'd put the gladiator teams, the fighters used to working together as a group. They were the most adaptable of all Norheim's fighters, and Layli intended to make them into a force to be reckoned with. She reached her position just as the Rheons did. Bracing her shield against her shoulder, Layli pushed into the line. Tristan took his place at her right, and Death fell in on her left. Dario moved to the princeps' other side, adamant that he wouldn't sit back and stay safe. That the colonel joined them was a bit of a shock, but plague wasn't. Being shorter, he stepped just ahead of Death to serve as his cover. Then the swords began to clash.
Hold the line, Layli yelled. Nikos, call the orders.
Not my men, he yelled back. They follow you, Wolf.
And that word was one every gladiator knew. From hundreds of mouths, the cry went up.
For the Wolf of Oberheim!
The Rheons never stood a chance. Overly disciplined, they locked their shields together, but the gladiators didn't care. Those with pikes aimed for feet. Those with longswords hacked at legs. Men fell, leaving gaps in the shields. Others tried to take their place, but it was an advantage and one the gladiators had been waiting for. Every hole in the line left an arm open. Every missing person revealed someone's side. Each flash of flesh was the target of a sword, until Layli was stumbling over bodies as her men pushed the Rheons toward the center.
Flank to Lanmont, she yelled. Press! Press!
The line began to bend. Those on the outside swung around the Rion's backs. The sound was deafening. Between the yells, the crashing swords, and the screams of defeat, Laylee's ears hurt, but she couldn't stop. Lances jutted toward her, always stopped by Death or Tristan before they could get close, but the wounded were just as dangerous. One man grabbed her ankle, trying to pull her off her feet, but Nikos was there. The colonel thrust a sword into the man's throat, making his hand go limp.
"Watch the dead," he yelled. "They're still fighting."
A few paces down the line, someone heard,
"We need cleanup."
"Got it,"
a handful of voices called out. Clearly, this was something the teams knew how to deal with. Every 20 men or so, someone stepped back to move behind the line. They always headed toward the center, back to the Norheim side of things, and they stabbed at every corpse along the way. It was brutal and cold, but efficient. While they worked, Norheim's push slowed, but only barely, almost as if the Rions watched the cleaners work.
"Good,"
someone yelled as he returned to the line. Farther down, someone else called the same thing, and then voices began to demand,
"Push!"
Like all the other players in this gory spectacle, Laylee pushed. She swung, battering at the shield before her, alternating shots with Tristan. When one of them was extended, the other was always ready to cover the exposed arm. Anyone who tried to counterattack paid for it, and often with the loss of his life, but they didn't slow. And then Rhea decided to fight back.
"Regalia!"
someone yelled, and their entire line moved forward. Death spat a curse and shoved Laylee back.
"Protect the wolf!"
Tristan's shoulder moved before her, and the gladiators pressed in until she was behind the lines, but it wasn't enough. A pike shot through, glancing off Tristan's shield and right at her head, but Nikos was there. His hand hit her hard enough to shove her off her feet. The ground came up, but the pike sailed over her head. The problem was that her men were backing over her. "Tristan!" she gasped, and somehow, over all the noise of battle, he heard. Like a wall, he planted his feet and leaned into the crush. The colonel's shield locked in with his on the right, and Death settled in on the left.
"Get her up!"
Tristan yelled.
"Lay, the baby!"
She was crawling backward, trying to get far enough away to find her feet without meeting a sword, when hands caught her. Plague wrapped his arms around her waist and lifted, but his eyes never left the battle. She looked back to see her men fighting with nothing but hope and willpower. It was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. Muscles flexed. Men screamed, hard enough that spittle glistened in the sun. They attacked in waves, the motion ripping along the line, as if passion itself had come alive and found a form. For two heartbeats, Laylee just looked, swearing she'd remember this always, and then she charged back in. "To Lanmont," she ordered. "Don't stop until we get there. Fight like gladiators." Death made room for her as he swung. The power of his strike cracked the shield before him, and Tristan saw.
"Hammer them,"
he ordered. With sheer strength of will, Laylee's fighters did exactly that. Wood began to splinter. Swords broke from the impact on both sides, but her men had the advantage. They'd fought for their lives enough times that they weren't afraid. They knew what could happen, and had found peace with it. The Rions hadn't. They used their presence to keep the peace, just like Laylee's army. Actual war wasn't something most of them had seen in a very long time, and none of them had ever faced an army like this. Before they could reach Lanmont, the sound of a horn cut through the ruckus. It was faint, but the Rions heard, and the enemy began repeating the order in their own language. Laylee couldn't make it out, but the shift in movement told her all she needed to know. They were retreating. The colonel realized it before she did.
"Hold the line," he ordered. "For the wolf, hold the line and do not give chase."
All around her, fighters lowered their weapons and stepped back, letting the Rions turn and run. It was over, at least for today, and Norheim had won. For a moment, Laylee just stood there, trying to let it all sink in. They'd won, but how many had they lost? Turning to survey the field behind them, she looked for the Lanmont yellow among the red of Rhea. There were far too many. "We need to gather the wounded," she said, mostly to herself. "We have to get them off the field."
"Your Majesty,"
the colonel tried, but she wasn't listening. "Plague, we're going to need carts to move them, and—" The colonel caught her arms.
"Laylee,"
he hissed, making her look at him.
That's my job. You need to report back and get ready to leave.
But her eyes were stuck on a man writhing a few yards away.
Nikos, we can help them.
And we will. That's my job, Your Majesty.
Lely, she corrected without thinking. There are no titles on the sands. It's just Lely. He palmed the back of her head and looked over her shoulder.
Tristan, make sure she gets back to strategy. I swear I'll treat these men like my own.
Lay,
Tristan asked. She nodded to show she'd heard. It's harder when they're all on my side.
Yeah, pup, and their partners will take care of them.
He turned her out of the colonel's grasp and checked her over.
The baby's still okay.
Someone heard.
What?
A man asked.
The wolf is pregnant.
Lely groaned. That was supposed to be a secret. Behind her, Nikos chuckled.
Secrets have a way of being noticed. Congratulations, Lion. You'll make a great father.
What? Lely asked, turning to face him. Nikos lifted both hands and backed away.
I listen, Your Majesty, and not just to nobles. It's common knowledge among gladiators that a man would never let another touch his partner.
He smiled.
And yes, I know how to keep a secret.
She ignored that and looked at Tristan. This could cause problems.
Yeah, but I finally get to do this.
Then he bent and kissed her, his mouth pressing into hers for a second before his smile ruined it.
We're still on the sands, Lay.
And there are regular soldiers among us. Tristan shrugged.
Trust your men, pup, and they'll trust you. And if anyone asks, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Never saw a thing, Death said.
But we really do need to report back. If we want to sneak out in the chaos, there's no time for this cute shit.
Right, she agreed. We'll also need a count of the dead on both sides and a guess of how fast Rhea can...
No,
Tristan told her.
That's the Odeon's job. Stop trying to do everything, pup. Let them do their thing, and you can make sure we can get the right Caesar on the throne.
Ugh!
Death made a disgusted noise.
It's a position, not a chair. No crowns and no thrones in Rhea.
Lely was confused. And yet you name an heir.
Subject to the approval of the Senate, yes. They are the representatives of the people, and they can vote for someone else, but rarely do. It only happens when the Caesar or Princep are considered corrupt.
And Vinco isn't, she shot back. He shook his head.
Not from Rhea's point of view. He's ambitious, and that's considered to be a good thing. Just like most Rheons wouldn't think a bloodthirsty queen is very impressive, but everyone in Norheim does.
Yeah, so let's get this bloodthirsty group of gladiators on their way to Rhea Dusu, she decided. Because I'm starting to think lying in a moving cart might just be the most relaxing thing I've done all week. Chapter 41 They left just after midday. Storm showed them the route most commonly used for traders. Cherry briefed Connell on everything a merchant would need to know, including how high to mark up his grain, and Dario found the ugliest set of horses, but he swore they were fit for the job. Her guards had worked together to find not only common clothes that wouldn't draw attention, but also meat knives and other common weapons, which would serve in a pinch. Then there was the box beneath the carriage. The Lanmont blacksmith had created bracelets to hold a small trunk against the bottom side of the bed. In it was not only every weapon Lely's group would want in Rhea, but also the most important thing of all, her crown. Fancy clothing and bags of Norheim coin were wedged in front of it, just in case they got stopped by brigands. And if a Rheon checked, it would look like the typical hiding spot for any successful merchant, so long as they didn't dig too deep. Leaving was as easy as she'd hoped, if a bit hurried. Cherry was staying to watch Joseph and help Theodian. That allowed Plague to go along. Dario would be driving the main cart, and Timoteo said he could handle the second. Astrid, Mara, Gianna, and Essa were posing as good country wives, which wasn't too far from the truth. Lely's guards sounded thrilled to have the women along, even the single men. Unfortunately, Gobin couldn't travel, and the physician warned that if Aldo tried, he could infect his wound, so they were staying behind. Then there was Lely, Tristan, and of course, Death. Altogether, their party consisted of 16 people, which was enough to scare away any but the most determined thieves. The Odeon had been authorized to say that Rhea's treachery meant the Queen would no longer speak to them if there was another parley, but Rhea was unlikely to ask for one. For the next couple of weeks, everything depended on Laylee's gladiators standing their ground, and she knew they could do it. The plan to get death into Rhea had been leaked to enough people that morale wouldn't suffer, but it was still nothing more than a rumor. If any Rheons tried to find her, they'd be sent on a wild chase to the north and far south, instead of checking behind them. For the first few hours, no one said a thing. All of them watched the horizon, waiting for the Rheon army to crest it. Laylee had claimed a spot in the back, lying on the grain, along with Astrid, Essa, Death, and Horus. Connell was beside her, with Tristan sitting in front beside Dario. The ride was bouncy, and Dario kept the horses to a working trot, pushing them harder than normal in the hopes of getting away without being noticed. Eventually, the pace became too much. When the wheel found a rut, the cart bounced hard enough that Essa lost her seat, landing half on top of Death. The look on her face made Astrid giggle, which set off Laylee. As if that was the signal, everyone began to relax. They'd made it far enough into Rhea now that they couldn't turn back. The best they could hope for was that the gods made this easy. Connell, however, still looked sullen, and Laylee wasn't the only one who noticed. Essa reached over and palmed his leg, forcing the prince to look up. He flashed her a weak smile and tried to turn away, but it was clear something was bothering him. "Did you tell Laylee?" Essa asked.
"Tell me what?"
Essa gestured to Connell. "The Rheon sent an assassin for your husband this morning while you were in parley."
"What?" Death growled.
"By the gods," Laylee hissed. "Were you hurt? Are you okay?"
"He never even touched me," Connell assured her. "It's just, they wounded Gobin to get to me. Aldo got stabbed, but he says it's nothing."
He paused again, leaving Laylee to hang on his words.
"And I watched Storm cut his throat."
"I'm so sorry," she told him. "It's over, and you don't have to think about it anymore."
"It's not okay," Death grumbled. "Rhea was the one who demanded the parley, not Norheim. For them to use that as cover for an assassin, that's anything but okay."
Essa waved him off. "Calm down, Gladiator. The women handled it."
"They did,"
Connell admitted, but his eyes were still focused on the land passing by.
"They were magnificent, like a bouquet of lethal flowers while I just stood there."
"You did not," Essa shot back. "You did exactly what you'd been trained to do." Connell nodded.
"I know."
He sighed heavily.
"I do know, but I can't stop wondering why Rhea would target me. Why that man attacked Gobin over me? Is it because everyone knows I'm helpless on my own?"
Tristan twisted and grabbed Connell's shoulder.
"Stop that. Thinking that way will do nothing but make you feel worse. Your men did their jobs, and they knew what they were hired for. Rhea went after you because you're the brains of this whole thing. Everyone knows that Prince Connell is a genius, and if Rhea wants to stop our push, taking you out would do it."
But Death was shaking his head.
"I don't think so."
He gestured toward Tristan.
"He's right, and he's wrong. When we were in parley, I got the impression Vinko's soldiers know nothing about this new regime."
"Rain," Laylee corrected.
"Sure,"
Death chuckled once at her tone.
"Whatever you want to call it. They didn't expect a queen to be the military expert, Connell. They thought it would be you. I was raised to expect Norheim lords to hide far behind the line and send their citizens up to die in their place. That's why my people think you're all barbarians. I'm willing to bet they also thought you're the one in power, because Norheim's queens have always deferred to their husbands, even that one who ruled on her own."
"Leandra," Laylee supplied. "Which is how we became Aravadis. She focused on trade and economic decisions, and let her husband handle anything military, even though she always stood on the field and loved to take the credit. And they probably assumed an attack behind the lines would be demoralizing."
"And explains why they rushed us before we even made it back."
Death was nodding.
"Rhea prefers to make a hard first hit and devastate the enemy, then subjugate what's left. Biggest dog in the pack kind of thing. It has a habit of working."
Connell huffed at that.
"Glad to know I was useful then."
"Hey," Laylee asked as she scooted over beside him.
Are you really okay?
I will be.
He rubbed at his face, then sighed again.
Lately, I may have made even bigger problems. The morning you left for Dalhurst, I ran into Holbeck.
Asshole, Dario grumbled from the front seat. Connell nodded to show his agreement.
He realized I wasn't going with you, and the conversation may have gotten out of hand.
Laylee surveyed his face, trying to get a hint of what exactly he meant by that. Bad?
Not sure, and we won't be there to do anything about it. I kinda snapped something about Tristan being my surrogate. I mean, it made so much sense at the time, but I was exhausted and not thinking straight. I hoped a new rumor would put the power back in your hands.
The entire cart had fallen silent, but Laylee's mind was spinning. And how'd that go?
I made it clear I wasn't going anywhere and that you'd married me as a matter of state, which you did. Then I said I couldn't sire children, thinking only that I have exactly zero bastards and how it would explain everything. But Holbeck made it clear that he wasn't trying to remove you from power. It's me he wants gone.
And you're not going anywhere, Laylee swore. I can't run Norhaime without you, Connell. Looking relieved, he reached over and took her hand.
You could. It would be messy and loud, but you could.
Well, I won't. But I guess this means the court will think Tristan's my lover?
Male mistress? Yeah, I think lover is a better word. Holbeck said something to me about how when a king takes a mistress, his wife tends to move to a quiet country province. He asked if I'd just hide in the library, and right about now, I'm kind of feeling like that would be the safest place.
Tristan shook his head.
Not letting you. You promised to help with the baby.
Yeah, but...
But, Tristan insisted, no matter what people think they know, if you claim that child, then she'll be safe, and her place in the line of succession can't be challenged. If I try, then she's a bastard, no different than Dario. He may be older than Laylee, and yet he's still just the heir.
Hey, Dario snapped jokingly. I will have you know that just the heir means a hell of a lot of work.
Laylee ignored them. Connell, you're still my husband. You're still my co-ruler. I still want you to share my family. Besides, we won't know if Holbeck says anything until we're back, and by then... She won't be able to hide it, Essa filled in, sounding thrilled with the idea. Let them wonder, Connell. Slowly, he began to nod.
Okay, I can do that. I just thought that if you have a lover and everyone knows about it, then maybe you and Tristan wouldn't have to hide things anymore.
His eyes moved to the cart behind them.
I mean, of all the people in the world, I know how hard it is not to reach out for a hand or anything else.
But what about you, she asked. When you agreed to this, it was with the condition that I not make a fool out of you.
And you didn't.
He shrugged.
I did this all on my own. The surprising thing is that I really don't care.
He squeezed her fingers between his.
I made those agreements when I knew no one and had nothing but this lie I'd been living. You've given me friends and a family. I think I can handle a few pompous lords giving me knowing looks.
Yeah, she mumbled, scooting down to rest her head on his shoulder. It's kind of easier to deal with the gossip when you know you're not alone, when you have people around to remind you that you're right and that they aren't important. I get it, but I'll still never ask you to sacrifice your pride for mine.
Then consider it a baby present.
He looked over and smiled at Tristan.
Guess this means I need to be Cherry's new sweetheart.
Dunno, Tristan said.
Sounds like Theodian wants Cherry to stay in Lanmont with Storm. Said she won't have to hide her preferences in his home. Maybe what Laylee needs to tackle next is the prejudice against queers.
Homosexuals, Death corrected.
Like with like.
Then he paused, a strange look crossing his face.
And I know exactly how to do that. Laylee, I think we'll send you back with a prominent Rian ambassador, once I'm the Caesar.
She lifted a brow. Oh?
A man and his husband. Of course, you couldn't refuse, not after just making peace with Rhea. Then having them seen in the palace would take the scandal off Connell and Timotheo's shoulders.
His grin showed he was still warming up to the idea.
And you could send Connell and Timotheo to Rhea a few times for political reasons. I promise I will treat them very well.
I will, Essa said. Death slowly looked over at her.
So you'll agree to marry me?
She huffed. Let's just say I haven't rejected you yet. I'll make my decision when you set your pride aside enough to ask me properly and have the title of Caesar.
So you just want me for my title?
Nope, Essad teased. But that title would make it impossible to say no. Without one, you're going to have to try a lot harder than just asking my sister if she's okay with it.
Sure,
Death agreed.
Then how's this? Are you okay with me thinking you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen?
From the front seat, Dario chuckled.
Getting warmer, Death, but Essa's going to give you hell before she says yes. I see. But she eventually will, Dario assured him. I can't remember anyone else who could make her blush.
Shut up, Essa snapped, before thumping her brother solidly in the back. I do not need your help.
Nope, but Death might. Sure won't complain if he pays me back with a good word to Astrid.
Laylee looked over at Connell and smiled. Right about now, I'm kind of glad we got our mess all sorted out.
Yeah, he agreed. And now I finally understand why men say marriage is such a horrible thing. Glad I'll never have to worry about it. Me too, Tristan declared.
This time, Laylee was the one doing the thumping. Chapter 42. The first few days on the road were tense, even with the jokes. Every time they paused for a break, Laylee expected to be caught, as if some Rion force would appear from out of the bushes. Even worse, the silence on the road was almost eerie. That first night, they stopped for only a few hours to let the horses rest, then were moving again before dawn. By the third day, they were starting to feel safe. No one had even looked twice at them, except for a man who wanted to buy a bag of grain for his own cart horse and was heading in the other direction. Most likely to bring supplies to the Rion soldiers, but Laylee wasn't brave enough to ask. Otherwise, the roads were completely empty. It was the seventh day, more than halfway to Rhea, when Laylee felt something. Sitting beside her brother, she sat up quickly, reaching for her stomach, and it happened again. The shock on her face didn't go unnoticed. Dario pulled his cart to a halt, slowly turning to look at her, but Laylee's focus was deep inside her body. Tristan, she breathed. He'd been walking beside the cart, but the sound of her voice made him rush over.
Is it okay, Lay? Is it the baby?
She caught his hand and pressed it to her abdomen. Can you feel that? For a moment, confusion covered his face. Then the fluttering happened again. His mouth dropped open, and he pressed a little harder. The cub inside her wasn't pleased, so began to thrash a little more, but it was still faint. No more than a butterfly in her guts. She still felt it. For the first time, she could actually feel her child moving.
Is that?
He looked up.
I feel a shiver, I think.
It's the baby. Astrid squealed behind her and began to crawl forward on the bags of grain. I want to feel...
Wait, Tristan ordered, refusing to move his hand.
Right on cue, the baby did it again.
I felt it, he breathed.
Then move, Astrid ordered as she reached around Laylee.
Connell,
Tristan yelled at the second cart.
Come here.
The prince consort climbed down, but looked confused as he headed over. While Laylee waited to feel the tremors of the baby again, the guys in the cart behind them started asking questions. Dario yelled back that the baby had finally quickened, and Connell walked a little faster. The others piled out as well, all coming to see what the fuss was about. Thankfully, the men had no interest in feeling it, but they still offered their congratulations. Tristan took them all with the proudest smile she'd ever seen. How far along are you now? Essa asked. Leaning back so her husband could press at her stomach, Laylee counted in her head. 14 weeks. Essa's head twitched. You seem big for 3.5 months. Is that bad? Laylee asked. No, Essa assured her. Just means that's a big baby, but kind of what we expected from Tristan. Are you sure you have the days right? Maybe it's more like 16 weeks? No, I'm sure. 36 days along when my father abdicated. Essa giggled, patiently waiting for her turn. You going to be upset if it's a boy, Tristan?
Nope.
He leaned around Connell to drape an arm around Laylee's shoulders.
I just want my family to be safe and healthy when all of this is over.
Then he kissed her temple.
because you're not allowed to leave me behind, Lei.
Promise. Right on cue, the baby jumped again, making Connell suck in a breath.
I felt it! I felt it! He grinned up at Tristan. We're going to be fathers.
Yeah, Tristan agreed. We're going to be the best fathers.
After that, the trip became easier and more lighthearted. Each time Laylee moved, someone asked if it was the baby, although it rarely was. It seemed the child went back into hibernation, not that Tristan cared. Every night, he fell asleep with his hand pressed over her belly, embracing both his wife and child. He also found any excuse he could to kiss her, and Death made sure to tease him about it. Naturally, Tristan teased back. The night before they were supposed to reach Riadusu, they made a real camp. They hadn't brought tents, but the men made the blankets work well enough for privacy. Dario hobbled the horses so they could graze, then went to set up his own place to share with Astrid. Connell and Timoteo worked together. Death claimed Essa. Crush and Armando made a secluded spot for their wives, and the single men promised they'd watch the carts. Tristan, however, had found the perfect spot in the wilderness, one far enough away to offer real privacy.
Lei,
he asked, offering his hand.
Come to bed with me.
Biting her lip, she let him lead her off into the darkness. There, beneath a canopy of trees surrounded by a wall of shrubs, he cleaned out a private area and laid down their blankets. It reminded her of their wedding night beside the pond, when they'd sworn to love each other forever. Unconsciously, she twisted her lion ring around her index finger. It was a match to the wolf on his hand, and neither were expensive things, but it didn't matter. The promises that came with the exchange of them was all she cared about. It was colder out tonight than it had been back then, and she knew her real husband better, but if anything, she only loved him more because of it. This is perfect, she told him. He moved behind her and wrapped his hands around her waist.
Tomorrow you'll be a queen again, but for tonight, just be my wife.
Maybe your wolf, she asked, releasing the fasteners of her dress. He turned around to watch her remove her clothes.
If that means you'll let me kiss you, then please.
The fabric fell to the ground, but what lay under it took longer to remove. While she focused on her corset, his hands found the laces of the pants she wore to hold the child in. She barely had her chest free when he released the ties at her hip, and the pressure on her waist vanished. Her stomach wasn't big yet, but it was bigger than she'd ever been, and only clothes would hide the change in her shape. The backs of Tristan's fingers traced the swell of their growing child.
I like your curves a lot, Lei, but I love this one the most.
Stop, she hissed, trying to bat his hands away. My bump is not sexy.
It is to me.
Then he knelt and kissed her belly.
I told you, pup, that you'd look so beautiful pregnant with my child, and I wasn't wrong.
Her teeth closed on her lip as he kissed the spot again. Really? She asked, not sure if she should believe him.
I swear to the gods, Laylee, I'd love you just as much if you were fat. It's never been your body that made me love you. Want you, yes, but this is not fat. This is our baby, and I think she makes you glow. Or he.
Tristan looked up.
Let me see all of you.
Feeling strangely nervous, she shucked off what was left and stood there in the moonlight while his eyes drank her in. Slowly he smiled, but he didn't reach for her. This time his hands were busy with his own laces and buttons. Pulling his shirt over his head, he tossed it away, exposing his own wooden necklace. One more thing that tied them together. But when he pushed his pants down, she knew he wasn't lying about how he felt. His erection stood as proof. How can you think I'm beautiful like this? She asked as she eased herself onto their makeshift bed. He smiled as he joined her.
Are you going to make me list everything I love about you? Let's see, there's the way you punch out with a shield and hit like a man twice your size, or the way your big brown eyes can make me forget anything else but how much I want to kiss you.
He pulled her against his chest.
And your hips are made to fit perfectly in my hands. Those tits, too. Lei, how could I not find you beautiful? From your body to your mind, and definitely your spirit, you're perfect. To me, you're as amazing as a goddess, but here, willing to let me be a part of your life.
Even when I'm moody and try to be too independent, when I'm starting to blow up like a broodmare. She looked up to see him nodding.
Especially then. I never asked for a weak woman, Lei. I mean, I may have found the strongest one in the world, but I couldn't be happier. Sure, we have our disagreements, but you talk to me, Pup. That matters more than anything else. If you talk to me, then you trust me. So long as we have that, nothing will ever come between us. And you are not a broodmare. I swear, your face looks nothing like those horses.
Tristan! Then she sighed. You know, if we didn't have to hide this from everyone, it would be so much easier.
But I didn't want easy. I wanted you, no matter what it took to get here. That's why I didn't fight against being chained with you. I hoped that I'd either die fast or prove I was worthy. And when your father gave me the chance to stay with you, Lei, I swore to follow you to all the foolish, noble things, and that's all they are, foolish. They have no bearing on this thing between us. Having to keep my hands to myself all day long only makes me want you more each night, pregnant or not, although...
He let his hands slowly move along her bare spine.
When you're not pregnant, it probably won't last long before I fix that.
She pressed into him with a little giggle. And Connell will no longer get all the credit. He huffed, dismissing that.
Your husband deserves some credit, and I don't mind sharing.
Gently, he pushed at her hip, encouraging her to turn away.
Roll onto the other side, Lei.
But...
Trust me, he whispered. I want to be close to you, but I don't want to crush our child. I can think of an easy way to have both. Let me show you.
She turned so her back was to him, and he shifted closer. First, his lips found the back of her neck, then his hips pressed into hers. She could feel the hard length of him, teasing her with its presence. As she began to slide her rump against him, he moved one arm around her side to cup her breast.
Is this still okay?
He asked, teasing her nipple until it hardened.
Mm-hmm.
So he shoved his other arm beneath her to fondle the other side.
And like this?
Lei let her head fall back onto his shoulder.
Oh, yes.
His mouth found her exposed throat, and he kissed, sucked, and made his way up to that sweet spot just behind her ear. When she finally let out a breathy moan, he tilted his hips and slid across her folds, dragging himself over the nerves that made her want to cry out. She didn't. Sounds carried too easily on the night air, but clamping her mouth shut only helped so much. Soft mules still made it through. Just when she thought she couldn't take any more, he finally sheathed himself in her. Like this, he felt even larger, but it was so good. Reaching behind her, she grabbed at his waist and pulled him deeper, showing the rhythm she wanted. When he matched it, she moaned loudly, forgetting about who might hear, because all that mattered was him, and she wanted to make sure he knew it. Against the side of her ear, he breathed,
I love you, Wolf. I will always love you.
The possessive growl in his voice was enough to send her over the edge. Chapter 43 Lei and her entourage had been gone for 10 days. Rhea made 4 different attempts to push across the border in that time, and it looked like they were setting up for another. From the top of the Landmont Citadel, Cherry could watch the units moving weapons and gear into position. It wouldn't be today. If she had to guess, they would strike at first light, which meant she had to think of something and fast. But what? Rhea had more soldiers, more discipline. On the other side of the room, Joseph had a collection of wooden soldiers laid out before him to mimic the battle. While her mind worried over the problem, the boy made a point of trouncing the enemy in their camp. Slowly, a smile began to spread across her lips. Over and over, Lei had made a point of saying that gladiators fought dirty, but could it really be that simple?
Joseph, she said as she pushed to her feet and held out a hand. You have to spend some time with Uncle Theo and the maps, okay?
The boy grabbed a handful of his toys and nodded.
And he can play? Doesn't he always?
She put a hand on his shoulder and guided him out of the room. In the time she'd been alone with him, Cherry had come to learn that Theodian was actually a very gentle man. He loved playing with the boy, but he had a soft spot for everyone in Landmont.
Unlike most men she'd been around, he didn't yell or rage. Instead, he found a way to make people feel important and to believe in themselves. He usually had a smile ready, and she'd never seen him turn anyone away.